Hello and welcome to the Innovation Agency podcast with me, Caroline Kenyon, in which we hear about innovations and improvements in health and care. In this episode, we look at an important aspect of organisational culture, leadership. Today I'm with Aaron Cummins. He's the Chief Executive of University Hospitals of Morecambe Bay, and we're going to talk about leadership style. In particular, Aaron's use of social media. He's got 5,000 followers on Twitter, where he describes himself as passionate about healthcare and improving patient experience. He also tweets about anything health-related and the odd rugby tweet. You can find him at Aaron Cummins NHS. Aaron, lovely to be here. Why do you use social media so much?
So that's really interesting. So some of that comes from, I guess, necessity. So our organisation covers 1,000 square miles. I really believe in being visible and accessible to our colleagues and patients. And sometimes it's just really hard to get everywhere that we cover all the time. So when I was appointed as chief executive, and actually a little bit before, I used Twitter in particular just to communicate out, share ideas, check in with our teams. So it's been a platform I've used for as long as I've been in the Bay, really.
Now, tell us a bit about your background, where you've come from, what brought you to Morecambe Bay.
Okay, so that's really interesting. So I started off life sort of between college and university wanting to be a rugby player. I played with Lee and Parkside Goulburn, who were an amateur club near where I grew up. Played at Lee for a little while, wasn't good enough to make the grade, had an injury that meant I started to consider other work, and then joined the graduate training scheme that got me onto the NHS programme, became an accountant. So I've had a career with the NHS since the year 2000. That career has been phenomenal, absolutely fantastic career. And as part of that career development, I've chosen to try and work in organisations where I would learn something and bring a little bit of me into that organisation, and had the real privilege to work in both mid-staffs through sort of Francis and the improvement work and the restructuring work that happened there, and as a result of that also then coming to Morecambe Bay to work through Kirkup and some of the improvement work we've led here. So a really fascinating career, most of which in the last 7 or 8 years has been spent in organisations, you know, wanting to improve with particular sets of circumstances.
Those experiences must have changed the way you work as a leader. What did you learn from that you thought was important to leadership?
Okay, so that's a question I've been asked quite a bit in my first sort of 20 months as a chief executive. And I've kind of reflected on my responses to this over time. But my leadership style is basically it's three things that I live by, and that's whether I'm being dad or, you know, being chief executive, around integrity, tenacity and compassion. So do what you say you're going to do, follow things through and make sure that they're done in the way that you've promised, and be kind. And they're the three sort of leadership traits that I've lived by most of my life. From a leadership style, how does that manifest itself? Real visibility, but more than that, I don't really show up for royal visits, I call them. So chief executives into departments armed with PR and photographs. I can see some of that playing out as visibility. For me, it's really listening, really sitting with teams to find out what's going on in their world and what that might mean for me and how the organisation might celebrate what they're doing or help them to achieve their goals. So visibility and accessibility, really important. The other element, particularly working in the two organisations most recently, the importance of being humble, being able to hold your hands up and say, we're a bit stuck and we haven't got the answers, but we're willing to work with you, whether you're a group of patients, families, communities or staff, on what we put together to help effect change and improvement for either colleagues or their patients. And the importance of fronting things up, being really honest when you've got things wrong, really working with those people to make things right in the future. So there's a few things that I've learned, particularly in the last 7 or 8 years as an executive. That's part of my leadership style now.
And today I see in your Twitter feed you've been to talk to new starters, corporate induction. How did that go?
Great. It's one of my favourite times of the month. So over the last 671 days, which is how long I've been chief executive at Morecambe Bay, which I tweet every day, I've inducted every new colleague that started with us. I think I've missed two because of annual leave. But for me, it's really important that new starters hear from me first and hear a bit about our approach to leadership and what I'm expecting of them, what they should expect from me. We have a saying in Morecambe Bay that we're all working really hard to create a great place to work and a great place to be cared for, and that's the conversation I have with new colleagues on their first day, including a log flume face, which if people follow me on Twitter will know what that is. I've just shared with yourself a photograph of that, which I'll tweet in a minute, but a bit of fun to start off with because it's important that we remember a long time in work, and I'm keen to people to have fun along the way.
Yeah, the picture's great. People with hands in the air looking shocked, horrified, well, having
like a bit
fun.
Of a log flume, yes. Yeah, that's the intention, yes.
That's great. And Twitter, how does that really help with leadership? And what impact does it have on staff? Do you encourage them to follow you? Do you encourage them to tweet?
Yeah, massive sponsor of social media, Facebook and Twitter. Predominantly as a means of... Face-to-face communication is always my preference. Having a conversation like this, having a dialogue with people is the best way of sharing good ideas, sharing issues and agreeing what we might want to do about that, or just having a good old-fashioned natter and a catch-up. But it's very hard to do that as consistently and as often as we'd like. So both Twitter and Facebook give us a platform to allow teams to share their good ideas, to ask for help for certain things, to catch up on what we're all involved in. So I really use social media to do a couple of things. Let our colleagues know what I'm up to, because it's important. I'm their chief executive. If I was not the chief executive, I want to know what mine's up to see whether I'm spending my time in the right areas or focusing on the right things, or even just answering the question, what do you actually do, which is a common one that gets asked of chief executives. The other is, you know, I use a phrase again, we pinch with pride. So I'm always scouting on Facebook and Twitter for organisations who are celebrating their successes. And then we connect with them or connect our teams to them to say, well, you know, Trust down the road or even down south or across the other side of the globe, we've done some really good stuff. You're one tweet away from a connection. Why don't we catch up and see if there's something we can nick or have a look at ourselves? And then there's also the platform that it gives us to work with our communities in a different way. Particularly in the Bay, we've got some rural and isolated communities, but we've got high engagement on social media and IT in particular, so we use it for that as well.
You mentioned the Bay. You're part of the Bay Health and Care Partnership, set up to introduce new models of care. How's that going, and what sort of role do you play in that?
Yeah, but Bay Health and Care Partners is great. I mean, it was born out of necessity at a time when our organisation in particular needed to make some real improvements. And at that point, we had lots of support from partners across the Bay, whether that be our commissioning colleagues, general practice, community teams, mental health, social care. And we came together 4 or 5 years ago now to say, well, some of the issues we're facing feel like it's more than just in the hospital. What might we look like if we start to make decisions together? You know, could that be better for our patients and our communities and our colleagues? And we've been on that journey for a little while now. We have made some real significant changes in the way services are delivered in the Bay, whether that's, you know, integrated care with our respiratory models or the transfer of some of our activity out to community ophthalmologists in our ophthalmology pathways or our new integrated musculoskeletal service with physios out in general practice, some real examples of how that's working. But for me, I enjoy it because I like the people. So, you know, we often get asked to talk about Bay Health and Care Partners and Morecambe Bay and integration. Comes down to relationships and trust, and we've just got a really great set of colleagues across the Bay who fancy doing a bit together and making some improvements, and it's nothing more complicated than that, really.
Is there something about the geography that you're in as well that makes relationships even more special, even more valuable?
Yeah, I think I'd said before, we cover 1,000 square miles. It's really hard for us to connect and be visible everywhere, so using the partnership to take those same messages or collect sort of the feedback and information on how services are developing is really important. I would say this, I think, because I'm Northern by birth and upbringing, but having that sense of adversity, we're in a geography that can be quite isolating with, you know, Barrow on the peninsula and up into the lakes, etc. So, you know, there's a lot of camaraderie and wanting to work together to make improvements up in this area of the world that we tap into. You know, we've got a strong farming community that are really hardy. We've got great community spirit in lots of our towns and villages because of necessity, again, because of how the geography is. So I know a lot of people look at our geography as a real challenge, and it is, but it does bring with it a certain set of circumstances that really focus the mind on working together in a different way, and that's at the core of the partnership.
And of course, in the downtime, you're surrounded by beautiful mountains, river, sea. That can't be bad.
No, it's a great place to live. You know, and we punch above our weight in the Bay around recruitment and retention, and I understand why. You know, to be at the gateway of the lakes, and you're right, you know, some great activities to do with friends and family here in South Lakes, in Lancaster, in Kendal, out in Barrow, you know, the shipyard. There are some just great places to kind of immerse yourself in. And of course, we've got the Eden project now that's developing in Morecambe, that's going to bring more focus on this area of the world, and you know, more power to the elbow. It's going to help again with recruitment and retention. So, yeah, if you're interested in a career in health or care, I can highly recommend coming to work with us in the Bay.
No harm giving it a plug.
No, not at all. No opportunity missed.
Tell us a little bit about the Eden project. Where is it up to?
So really early in its development at the moment. I know the project is reaching out to communities and partners about our joint ambitions, particularly around how the facility might be used for education and economic regeneration. We had a session at our partnership board just before Christmas with the educational lead. Really fascinating to connect that with some of the work we're doing on anchor institutions, population health, really recognising the role of public sector bodies in our area about improving opportunities and the health and wellbeing of all of our communities, not just when you're poorly and need treating. So huge opportunity for us in Morecambe and across the wider Bay. So excited to be part of that.
Now, we've talked a lot about culture and your leadership style, your openness, about communication. How do you get that culture to be embedded at every level throughout the trust with all staff?
Yeah, it's a $6 million question, isn't it? So as a chief executive, I'd be surprised if other chief executives in either NHS or, you know, the private sector don't face that question all the time. You know, what is our culture? What does it need to be? What are we about? What does it say about us? So for me, culture is just the dominant conversation. It's the discussions that happen around water coolers or on wards or departments. What's the focus of our team? 6,500 teams in the trust, 10,000 across the Bay. And for us, it's making sure that the vision is clear and our strategy is clear around creating that partnership and focusing on the health and well-being and improving population health in the Bay. And we want people to be focused on making improvements. So empowering colleagues to make improvements, to feel like it's their responsibility and they've got permission to do that when they see it. So for me, the dominant conversation is about improvement. It's about quality and safety and experience. And the way to effect change or ensure that culture is changing at every level of the organisation is to ensure that those conversations are happening at every level of the organisation, whether that's in team meetings, corridor conversations, corporate communications. So again, it might sound a little bit like teaching grandmother to suck eggs with me saying this. I don't know who would be listening to the podcast or the material, but you just get really clear on what we are focused on, and then every conversation becomes a pivot around that particular point. And we just keep talking about it, and we keep doing it, and we keep reminding ourselves as to why we're doing it, and we call it out when it isn't happening, and we celebrate it when it does. And it sounds really easy when you say it, but to do that day in, day out across a huge, complex organisation, it's much more difficult than you might think.
It sounds very difficult. Can you measure it in any way? Can you be sure that things are improving?
Yeah, and you can measure it through two ways, really. So, you know, there's the hard-edged metrics, and I do believe, you know, what gets measured gets done. So if you signal intent and you set a measure around it and then you measure it and report on it, that is one way of driving a different conversation. So we use things like our dashboards and our performance reports and, you know, some of the feedback that we get through survey results to check in as to whether this thing that we're talking about is having an impact. And I'm pleased to say largely it does. We see, you know, greater quality of care, better staff and colleague satisfaction results coming back. But there's also making sure that you're really listening. So you can get persuaded a little bit by dashboards and reports, which is why it's so important to check in and do, I call them site mooches or, you know, ward walkabouts, the tea and talk sessions that I do with colleagues sort of three or four times on each of our sites each month. Encouraging all of our teams to have that informality of checking in. That's where the real richness of understanding comes from and where we make some of our biggest improvements, I think.
What's your current aim for the Trust? Do you have a particular thing that you're focused on? It may not be in your business plan, but something that culturally you want to aim for.
Yeah, for quality, safety and experience to drive every action that we take, to really focus on patients and colleagues, to fix in on that great place to work and a great place to be cared for, to be the dominant narrative for us as an organisation. I think the vision for the Trust to be one of the safest and best experience for people who are needing health and care in the NHS is a clear one. For me, it's also really maximising the opportunities we have under the Integrated Care Partnership and Bay Health and Care Partners. And it is that time of year, it's planning round, we're awaiting some long-term plan guidance from our national leads. So we are going to regroup as an organisation and think about this next phase for us, so it's quite a timely question. And for me, you need to check in with teams and patients, check in with the colleagues. Is this still the right direction for us? Does this strategy make sense? Is this vision right for us? So it is far from a chief exec sat around the board table, which we are at the moment, deciding on a direction for the organisation. It does come with a role, it's part of my responsibility, but I don't do that on my own. That's with the board of directors and 6,500 colleagues that we will talk to in order to get it right.
What do you do in your spare time?
Okay, so I do get spare time. I think it's an urban myth that chief execs are working 24/7. So there's a couple of things that are really important to me. I'm an early riser, so I'm always up at around 5 a.m. And I always start the day with some form of physical exercise. It's largely weight training, so I don't want to give a misnomer that I'm physically fit. But for me, that's really important. It allows me to clear my head, do some thinking. I quite like that sense of having done a bit of exercise before I come to work. So I do spend a bit of time doing that every day. I also spend a lot of time with my children. So I have four children, getting towards grown up now. Eldest is 18, youngest is 13. I have them every other weekend. And because we live in Kendal, we do an awful lot of stuff outdoors, whether it's, having a hike up to the mountains or across the lakes, or we're out and about walking, or, enjoying some of the scenery that we have here. That's also really important for me. And then the third thing that I like to do, I'm a bit of a movie geek. So I'm also, having just said I'm an early riser, I'm also late to bed. Now, I know some people might say that's not doable, but I've been like that since about 15, so that's just me. And I can't switch off until I've watched a film. So I watch a movie most nights between 10:30 and midnight. I'll watch a movie, and it just allows me to switch off. So if you want me on a pub team, it's always around the films bit.
I have to ask you, what's your favourite movie?
So favourite movie, I wax and wane. Jaws always features in the top three, as does Goodfellas or The Shawshank Redemption.
I'm not sure what I make of that. exercise is important to you. Do you think that's something, is that a message you pass on to others you work with as well?
Yeah, hugely important for physical and mental health and well-being. We have our Flourish programme in Morecambe Bay, which is our health and well-being strategy. And one of the elements of that is Move More. Just a simple getting off your bum and going for a walk between meetings, being conscious that if you've been sat down for a long time to just do a bit of stretching. If you're able to do it, and it doesn't take expensive gym memberships or kit, just three times a week, 20 minutes, half an hour, sit-ups and press-ups at home. I can only advocate for the personal impact it's had on me over the last sort of 5-10 years that I've been doing that. So I'd advocate any colleague or patient to fit physical exercise into their day, yes.
Any regrets that you're not, what now, managing a rugby league club or head coach of a rugby league club, the other path you might have taken?
I must admit, we've just had the start of the Super League season, sort of first round of matches. I'm the world's worst spectator because there's part of me at my age that still thinks you could pull on a pair of boots and have a go. I only have to do one of the couch to 5K sort of runs here and realise that I'm not in that condition that I could probably do that. But I must admit, the same values that I had, playing and the ambitions I had wanting to play rugby, that team environment, the leadership narrative, clarity of purpose, I get an awful lot from the role that I have today and working with a fantastic team. So I could draw analogies to leading a, whether it's a football or a rugby club or, leading a team to deliver certain objectives today. So no regrets.
It's been absolutely fantastic talking to you and scrumming down. Is that the right term? Thank you so much, Aaron.
Thanks, Aaron. Thank you very much.
If you'd like to learn about building the right culture for innovation and improvement, the Innovation Agency's Coaching Academy offers a variety of learning experiences for individuals and for teams. Find out more at innovationagencynwc.nhs.uk. Thank you for listening.